Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio proudly presents R.A. Salvatore's The Demon Wars Saga. Book 1, The Demon Awakens, Part 3. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Eric Messner, Elizabeth Jernigan, Tim Getman, Peter Stray, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Terence Aselford, Mort Shelby, Stephen Carpenter, Thomas Penny, Lily Beacon, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, James Konacek, Ken Jackson, Chris Rowan, Johan Detweiler, Nanette Savard, Scott McCormick, and Corey James. The skinny, nervous man skidded away from the noose trap and from the ugly humanoid creature hanging from it.
Stab me! Oh, stab me! Creak! Creak!
A few moments later, Chipmunk breathed a little easier as a bald, lean man rushed into view, his sword at the ready.
Chipmunk! Chipmunk, oh yeah!
Chipmunk scrambled to his feet and ran for his friend.
What do you know?
Chipmunk hopped up and down, pointing back across the field to a small copse of trees.
A trap?
Chipmunk nodded so rapidly that he bit his tongue.
What, we catch something?
Again, a wild nod.
Something unusual?
Chipmunk was in no mood for any further questions. He grabbed Crick by the arm and shoved him ahead in the direction of the copse. Crick straightened, and seeing that Chipmunk would not be following, just shook his head and went alone to the trap.
It's a goblin! It's a damn goblin!
We got to get Paulson!
Crick only nodded and ran off, Chipmunk in close pursuit. They found barrel-chested Paulson, their leader, sitting, relaxing against the sunny side of a wide elm, his ragged boots standing off to the side, his dirty toes wriggling near a small fire. The pair slowed as they approached, knowing that to disturb Paulson usually meant a slap on the head.
State your business, and your business better be worth stating.
Oh, we caught something.
Good pelt?
No pelt.
No fur, just skin.
What? Don't tell me you hanged a man now.
Not a man.
It's a damn goblin.
A goblin?
Both men nodded eagerly.
Just one?
Again the nods.
Ah, you damn fools. Don't you know there's no such thing as just one goblin?
We should go home.
Paulson looked all around, then shook his head. Crick and Chipmunk were fairly new to the area, having come north a little more than 3 years before. But Paulson had lived on the border of the Wilderlands for most of his life, had been living just outside Weedy Meadow when the goblin raid had flattened Dundalus.
Ah, we got to find out how many and find out where they're heading.
Ah, who's to care for the folk of Dundalus? They never cared for us.
Yeah.
It's more than for them. For ourselves! If goblins are coming hard, then we'd be wise to go south for a bit.
Oh, can't we just go south then anyway?
Ah, shut your mouth and keep your sword ready. Goblins ain't so tough. It's their numbers you got to fear. And their friends. For goblins and giants get on well together. But all we got to do is see them before they see us. Might be there's a bounty on goblin ears.
That seemed to catch the pair's attention. The three went back to the trap first, Paulson unceremoniously cutting the goblin down, then slicing off its ears and putting them in a pouch, pausing only to note that the creature was surprisingly well-armed for one of its kind, and that it wore an insignia on its leather jerkin, a black emblem of a bat-like creature on a light gray background. Paulson didn't think too much of it, figuring that the jerkin was stolen anyway.
Not been here more than a few hours. If this one traveled with his friends, then they're likely still about.
The creature's tracks through the copse were not hard to follow, but any marks it had made on the open field beyond had been erased by the wind. Still, just by the direction from which it had entered the copse, the trackers could make a reasonable guess about where it had come from. And so they set off quickly across the field and into the forest. Chipmunk found the first goblin sign. Three sets of tracks, with one branching back the way the three men had come, the other two moving off down a different fork in the trail.
Well, now we're outnumbering them.
Less than a mile on, they spotted the goblin pair, resting amid a tumble of rocks on a forested hillside. Paulson drew out his large sword and motioned for Crick to go in at his side, while Chipmunk was to go to the higher ground around to the right, getting an angle for his dagger throws.
Hard fast?
No. Follow my lead.
Paulson started out slowly, pacing evenly and calmly toward the goblin pair. He and Crick were within a dozen strides before the goblins spotted them. The goblins jumped to their feet, one producing a long iron-tipped spear, the other a well-fashioned short sword. Paulson and Crick came on fast, but only one goblin, the spear wielder, jumped out to meet them, blocking the way, covering its companion's sudden retreat. Paulson stepped inside the range, caught the spear by the shaft, and rushed up its length.
Two more ears!
Get the other one, Chipmunk!
The fleeing goblin angled up the hill, and Chipmunk moved to intercept, sliding to his knees and sending a pair of daggers spinning at the goblin. The creature managed to dodge one, but the other caught it on the hip and hung there. The goblin hardly slowed and quickly was out of throwing range. Chipmunk fell in with Paulson and Crick, taking up the chase. Tall Crick was by far the fastest of the three, and he forged ahead. The creature went up over a rise, Crick in close pursuit.
Take the damn thing down!
Crick went up to the top of the hill, eager, sword ready, and then, to the surprise of his two friends, he skidded to a stop. Paulson and Chipmunk quickly understood Crick's hesitance, for there, in a wide valley below the ridge, loomed the largest army that any of the three had ever seen. All the valley was filled with tents and campfires. 1,000 forms milled about down below, most seeming about goblin-sized, some even smaller, but with a fair number of Fomorian giants among them. Even more surprising to the three men were the war engines, a dozen at least, great catapults and spear-throwing ballistae, and huge corkscrew devices, obviously for burrowing through fortified walls.
How far south were you planning to move?
Ah! I'm knowing that you're up to something no good. An assumption I'm sure to make every time I glance upon your ugly faces.
Brad Warden had heard the stirring in the small ramshackle hut, and upon investigation had found the three trappers packing their gear, stripping everything from the shack walls. The trapper stepped out of the small hut.
Well, have you an explanation?
We're leaving, that's all!
Leaving?
Going south!
What did you do then? I know ye. You'd not be leaving if you hadn't angered someone. You got Nightbird on your trail.
We ain't seen the Ranger in weeks.
But you've seen his friends. Might be that you've killed one of his friends.
Oh, no such thing!
Goblins ain't no friend of the Nightbird!
Goblins?
Did I say goblins?
You did. You said goblins, and if there'll be goblins about and you know of them, then tell your tale in full. Or be sure that I'll trample you down in the dirt.
Goblins. Thousands of goblins. We've seen them and we want no part of them.
Paulson went on to recount the tale in full, and ended by dropping four goblin ears to the ground before Brad Warden.
Now, we told you what we know. Let us be on our way.
I don't think so. I think Nightbird and Pony are going to want to hear about this.
They found the pair and Brother Avalon at Elbrian's camp just north of Dundalus, nestled within the shelter of a grove of closely growing spruce trees.
Hello, the camp!
Approach easy, my friend. You know you're always welcome.
Brad Warden led his charges up to Elbrian's camp. He could tell by the look on Elbrian's face that he was surprised to see Brad Warden in the company of such scoundrels.
I believe that Mr. Paulson there has a tale you'll be wanting to hear.
Paulson laid it out simply and to the point, and his words hit especially hard on Pony and on Elbrion. The ranger took a stick from the edge of the low fire and drew a rough map of the area on the ground.
Show me the exact location.
Paulson readily complied, understanding that if Elbrion wasn't satisfied, the ranger would probably force him to go along, the better to investigate.
They must be told.
On the word of these three?
It is never too soon to issue a warning. I will go north to this place described.
I'll not go with you.
I will fly fast. Too fast for you.
Elbrion looked at Bradwarden, and the centaur nodded, understanding the plea, and more than ready to go along with his ranger friend.
You and your friends will go to End of the World, bearing word of warning.
And then?
Where your heart takes you. You owe me nothing, I say, beyond this favor.
Ah, oh, we're owing you even that.
Elbrion's grim nod was all the reply that the man was going to get. A poignant reminder of that day in the trapper's shack when the ranger had shown mercy.
End of the world. And we'll tell the fools, but I'm not thinking they'll be listening.
Elbrion nodded and looked at Pony.
Weedy Meadow, you and Avalon.
And what of Dundalus?
Bradwarden and I will return to Dundalus with word of the goblins. But first, we will return here.
The ranger pointed down at the map with his stick, to a spot on the map northwest of Dundalus, a point nearly equidistant from Dundalus and Weedy Meadow, and not much further from End of the World.
The grove?
A diamond-shaped grove of fir trees.
I'm knowing this spot, and I'm not much caring for it.
1 week, then. If you go straight to the south from End of the World, be certain that the folk of the town know where I can be found.
Paulson waved him away, the man seeming quite displeased by it all. Elbrion motioned to Bradwarden.
Symphony is about.
Before the next dawn, the ranger and the centaur were racing to the north, Bradwarden working hard to keep up with Magnificent Symphony. Avalon and Pony, walking side by side, set a more gradual pace, for they figured that they could arrive in Weedy Meadows before the nightfall. The road was a bit longer for Paulson, Crick, and Chipmunk, but though the latter two pressed Paulson hard for desertion, telling him every step of the way that they should abandon End of the World and go straight on to the south, all the way to Palmaris, perhaps, the big man, duty-bound for the first time in years, would hear nothing of it. He had given his word to the ranger that he would go and warn the folk of End of the World, and so he would. Pony and Avalon had underestimated the distance and camped outside Weedy Meadow that night, the monk reasoning that it would be better for them to go into town with such grim warnings during the brightness of day. They rested easily in the quiet forest, having learned much of camp building from Elbrion over the last few days, and Pony was soon asleep.
The goblins! The Dactyl awakes!
Avalon, wake up!
The look upon Avalon's face as he stared at her was one of madness, one that sent chills up and down Pony's spine. Avalon lifted his hand and opened it, revealing several small stones, the burned smoky quartz that he had taken from the corpse of Brother Quintal.
I felt they had magic left in them. Distant sight is their trademark.
You looked for the goblins?
And I saw them, my girl. A vast host. Paulson did not exaggerate. But that was not all. I was compelled beyond the army. Compelled, I say, pulled by the magic of the stones. By a distant power that long ago attuned itself to these special stones.
Pony looked at him curiously, not really understanding.
Something terrible is awake, my girl. The Dactyl walks Corona.
In the light of a dying fire, Pony had no doubt that Avalon's knowledge of the awakened Dactyl was now something more than the suspicions aroused by ancient texts. It was something entirely personal.
So, there you have it.
Bradwarden and Elbrion looked out over a vast field of dark tents.
Them three wasn't lying.
Or even exaggerating.
We'll find us a hole to hide in. Goblins been through afore, and I'll be through again. I've waited them out afore, and I'll wait them out again.
We need to know more of their intentions.
Not so hard to figure out what a goblin means to do.
This is different. Goblins and giants should not be together in so large a group. And working in concert? And what of those?
Elbrion pointed to a dozen huge war engines circled on the far end of the camp.
They're a bit hungrier this time is all, so they'll kill a few more than usual. maybe sack two towns instead of one. It's an old tale, my friend, repeated again and again. Though always do your human folk seem surprised when it falls on your heads.
I have to go.
Do you now?
Elbrian slipped down from Symphony and handed his reins to Bradwarden.
Scout the area. See if any branches of the army have moved past our location. I will return at the setting of Sheila to this spot or to the back of the next ridge if the goblins have claimed this area as their own.
Elbrian made his way from tree to tree to bush and to the back of hills, moving ever closer to the great army. Soon, goblin scouts were about him, walking through the trees. Elbrian was only able to make out small bits of conversation, but what he did hear unnerved him. The goblins were speaking of being a part of an army. That much was certain. Elbrian got his next surprise an hour later. The ranger was up in a tree, lying low across a thick branch, barely 10 feet from the ground, when a group of soldiers walked into the clearing below the tree. Three were goblins, but the fourth, holding the torch, was a creature the ranger had never before seen. A dwarf, barrel-chested but spindly-limbed, wearing a red cap.
Powery.
The four decided to rest right at the base of the wide-spreading tree. Fortunately for Elbrian, none of the creatures bothered to look up into the tangle of branches. The ranger wasn't sure how to proceed. He felt that he should steal that bloody cap as further proof for the townsfolk that danger was sweeping their way. The four were down and resting. Perhaps they would drift off to sleep. One of the goblins brought out a bulging water skin, and as soon as the creature poured some of the foaming liquid into a mug, Elbrian knew that it held some potent drink indeed. A few minutes later, one of the goblins went off a short distance into the brush to relieve itself. Elbrian could still see the creature, a darker spot in the brush, its back to him, swaying back and forth as it watered a bush. The ranger shifted slowly to a sitting position. He lifted an arrow to Hawkwing's string and gently pulled back. He glanced down at the other three, then aimed at the one relieving himself.
What was that? Shulak, the both of you!
The dwarf motioned for the two goblins to move out. Up on the branch, the ranger fitted two arrows to his bow, one above the other. The two goblins paced out in front of the dwarf, side by side. Elbrian leapt from the branch, letting fly another arrow in midair. Landing, the ranger flicked the feather tip and string from Hawkwing, staff at the ready. The dwarf was ready too, a two-headed flail spinning in its hands. The stout creature hardly slowed as it was hit with Hawkwing and rushed ahead, whipping its flail back and forth. Elbrian presented his staff vertically, both balls of the flail wrapping about it. The ranger pulled hard, and the dwarf only pulled back even harder. Always ready to improvise, Elbrian eased his muscles and ran straight ahead into the dwarf, turning his staff to smash its tip into the dwarf's face once more. Elbrian tugged again, and the chained balls flipped off the staff's end, freeing both weapons. The Powry retreated a step and shook its head fiercely. Then, to Elbrian's disbelief, came charging right back in. The ranger stepped straight ahead and closed his fist. His attack showing little effect, the ranger spun to the side, grabbed up his staff in both hands, and tugged hard, pulling the flail free of the Powry's grasp. Sensing that the furious dwarf would be charging again, Elbrian came all the way around and jabbed Hawkwing hard into the creature's throat. The ranger spun again and smashed the staff down diagonally across the Powry's jaw. Elbrian simply could not believe the punishment this creature was accepting. The Powry dipped its broad shoulder, locked its thin arms about Elbrian's waist, and squeezed him tight, driving him back toward the trunk of the huge tree. The ranger dropped Hawkwing, reached behind him through his pack, and tore free his hatchet. He chopped it down hard on the back of the Powry's neck. Still, the dwarf drove him backward. Elbrian looked at his weapons, so ineffective against the sturdy Powry.
I need a sword.
Elbrian took the dwarf's cap and gathered up Hawkwing, quickly replacing the feather tip and stringing the weapon. The ranger ran off, arriving at the appointed spot as the moon settled behind the western horizon. Bradwarden and Symphony were waiting for him, the centaur bearing ill news. a section of the army had indeed broken off from this main group. So the tracks had shown, heading south and west.
End of the world. They're near to the place already, if not sleeping in the village itself.
Elbrian hopped up on Symphony. He knew there would be no sleep for him this night, nor the next.
Remain here.
Elbrian and Brad Warden reached a diamond-shaped grove.
Or in the region, at least. See what the news is from Weedy Meadow and prepare the folk of Dundalus for the decision that will soon be before them.
The humans aren't much for talking to the likes of a centaur. But I'll see what I can see and set my animal friends about to the north and west, looking for goblin sign. You're for end of the world, then?
I pray that I arrive in time, or that the three trappers got word to the folk.
Pray for the second, for hoping for the first, I fear will be a waste of your time. And for the trappers, pray instead that the folk are smart enough to heed their words.
Symphony was already lathered from the long run south, but he had more heart than any other horse, and understood his rider's urgency. Off the stallion pounded through the pre-dawn forest, running on all through the next day. From one high hillock, Elbrian noted hopefully that no smoke appeared in the west. That end of the world apparently was not burning. Elbrian first noticed the ghostly figures moving through the mist as twilight descended. The ranger still had a dozen miles before him to get to end of the world, and so shapes moving through the forest, moving eastward, did not bode well. He brought Symphony up behind a thick tangle of white birch and strung Hawkwing, ready to fight all the way to the westernmost village if need be. Somewhere not far ahead and to the side, a small shadow glided through the trees, a slender form, not much higher than Elbrian's waist. The ranger put up his bow and drew back, finding the mark. He saw the form stumble out of some brush and stagger along the trail. It was the right size for a goblin, a small one, but the way it moved didn't seem right to the perceptive ranger. This was not a lead soldier in an army's march, but one exhausted in desperate flight. The ranger waited a few moments longer as the figure neared, as it came out into a clearing under the moonlight. A young boy, no more than 10 years. The ranger bent low to the side and caught the fleeing boy under the arm, easily hoisting him up into the saddle. A movement from the other side caught the ranger's attention. He pushed down hard to secure the squirming youngster and swung about, Hawkwing in his free hand, ready to fend off an attack. The would-be attacker skidded to an abrupt stop.
Paulson?
And yourself, Nightbird. Yeah, be easy on the boy. He's been through the fighting.
End of the world?
Paulson nodded grimly. Other people walked into the small clearing then, dirty, many with wounds, and all with that hollow, shocked expression, showing that they had just come through hell.
Yeah, goblins and giants hit the place 2 days after we arrived.
And dwarves!
Crick came into the clearing beside Chipmunk.
Nasty folk.
Powries.
Yeah, we got some of the folk on the road south before the fight. Some smart enough to hear our words of doom. But most stayed. Stubborn. They came in hard, Nightbird. Any numbers I've not have believed possible had I not seen the army in the north for myself. We got out. Me and Crick and Chipmunk. We took about a score of folk with us, running blind through the woods these few days, thinking we got goblins on our heels the whole way.
There is a sheltered meadow 200 yards from this spot. Take your band there and huddle together to fend off the cold. I will scout out the lands west and return quickly that we might make our choice.
We could be using some rest.
Elbrian let the boy down to Paulson's waiting grasp. And the ranger was touched by how gently the bearish man handled the youngster. Elbrian set off, riding hard through the moonlit woods. He was out an hour and more before he decided that there were no goblins in the area, no dwarves, and certainly no giants.
Why didn't the beasts pursue the fleeing group? And why was the western sky clear of smoke? The goblins must have burned End of the World, just like they did Dundalus.
Elbrian slipped down from Symphony at the side of the meadow.
Stay close, my friend. Wait for my call.
He went into the small encampment and found a place about the fire with the three trappers.
I would have thought that you three would take the south road with those who were wise enough to flee.
The ranger noted then the way Crick looked hard at Paulson, the way Paulson kept his own gaze low to the fire.
It wasn't time.
Albrian paused for a long while, studying Paulson, trying to find some clue as to the reason for this uncharacteristically chivalrous action. Finally, Paulson looked up, locking stares with the ranger.
All right, so we're with you then. But don't you think for a moment that we three give a beaver's damn for Hans the Bear or any town between here and Ursel?
Then why?
Paulson looked down at the fire. He stood up and kicked a stick that had fallen from the flames, then walked off. Albrian looked at the man's companions. Crick motioned across the way to the boy Albrian had captured.
Paulson had a boy once, about same years as that one. Fell from a tree, broke his neck.
That one there lost his folk, by my own guess.
You could have gotten away to the south.
Well, we could have, but you see, that ain't what we're
about. And I'm not liking smelly goblins. I mean to get me enough goblin ears so that a single gold piece bounty will put me in a big house with a dozen serving wenches on 100 acres of land.
Albrian nodded and smiled, trying to calm the brute. But Paulson only kicked the dirt again and stormed away. It was more than any bounty, the ranger knew. And given the fact that Crick and Chipmunk had remained, it was more than the tale of a child lost. These three, for all their faults and all their vocal protests, carried some degree of humanity within them. Whatever complaints Crick and Chipmunk might offer, they had remained in the area because of the refugees, out of simple compassion. The next day, Albrian set the refugees on their way for Dundalus, if possible, though he gave Paulson several alternate choices, caves and sheltered vales. Then the ranger set off, riding hard for End of the World, looking for answers or hints of what might yet come, and hoping to find more refugees. The forest was perfectly quiet as he neared the town. Still, he saw no smoke blackening the sky. Albrian left Symphony in the forest and moved tree to tree, crossing past goblin sentries undetected, at last finding a good vantage point on the edge of the village. Goblins, dwarves, and giants swarmed in the place, moving as if this were their home. Albrian saw the bodies, dozens of dead, human and humanoid, thrown in a ditch on the western edge of town. But this was not as the sack of Dundalus had been. The building showed very little damage. None had been burned.
They mean to use End of the World as a base camp, a supply depot. From End of the World, this force could swing south and then east, cutting off the roads for any people fleeing Weedy Meadow or Dundalus.
Albrian turned to leave, picking the course that would get him back through the forest to Symphony. At the sound, Albrian squatted low, considered his options. He could hardly leave, but if he was caught here, then the information he possessed might never reach Weedy Meadow or Dundalus. There was more at stake here than his own life. Albrian dashed across the clearing between two houses, held still long enough to survey the area, then ran on to the house in question.
A meal for a dog! You get me some proper food or I'll eat the arm from your ugly son!
Albrian moved along the side of the house, finally spotting a small, unshuttered window. Inside the house, the powery advanced on the woman, its hand raised to deliver another heavy blow. It stopped, though, a couple of feet from its intended victim, looking down at the woman curiously. She looked at the dwarf, not understanding. Her eyes wide, the woman looked past the fallen powery to the window, where stood the ranger, motioning to her and to her son to be quick.
Follow closely.
The three got from house to house and across the short clearing to the woods. They entered the shelter of the trees.
Ah, there be an archer about.
Run!
They scrambled through the woods desperately. Albrian realized that the goblin sentries would soon be all about them, swarming about the forest. He saw the shapes of two such goblins paralleling the movements of his group. Up came Hawkwing. The three came upon Symphony. Elbian hoisted the woman onto Symphony's back into the saddle and placed the boy behind her.
Tell the Centaur what you have seen in End of the World.
I don't understand!
Tell Bradwood, remember that name, and all the others that the goblins will likely move south and east to cut off their escape. I will join you as soon as I can. Run, Symphony, all the way to the grove to Bradwood.
What of you? How will you get away from this place?
Elbian had no time for answers. He pulled his hand free. He watched for a moment, confident that the woman and boy would be safe enough with Symphony carrying them. Then the ranger turned his attention to his own predicament, looking about at the many shapes moving among the shadows of the trees.
I fear Weedy Meadow is in grave danger.
From a high vantage point some 2 miles south of the village, Elbrian saw the villagers shoring up walls, scrambling about in preparation. The army was readying to attack Weedy Meadow, and Avalon and Pony had not been able to convince the townsfolk to leave. Not many, anyway. Though now, with the storm cloud that was the goblin army hovering about the village, many of the folk began to recognize their folly.
None of it will make a difference.
The only hope for Weedy Meadow's 40 people was to get out of the village and far away. And with the goblins moving in from all sides, the only possibility of that was with the help of the ranger and his friends.
What are you thinking?
We have to get them out, Bradwarden.
Not so easy a task. I'd be betting, else Avalyn and Pony would have them far away already.
Bradwarden paused, watching Elbrian's pained features as the man continued to stare to the north.
We'll get Pony and Avalyn at least, and some others. I'm not doubting. Most won't go, you know that. They'll be staying with their homes until they see the enemy. Then they'll know their doom. Then it'll be too late for them.
Will it?
I know that look. What are you planning?
There.
Elbrian pointed to a position just east of the village, to a pair of 2,000-foot-tall mountains, their steep sides white with snow, crossed by the dark lines of many leafless trees.
The valley between those hills is full of boulders and pine groves. Cover enough if we move the folk quickly.
You'd choose the low ground for your escape.
Too many trees. They would get no clear shots or spear throws from above.
They'll come down like a mass of swooping hawks.
Will they?
Pony grabbed Elbrian in a hug as soon as she spotted him entering the common room at Weedy Meadow.
Oh, how did you get in here? We know the goblins are all about.
Thicker than you believe.
Avalyn bounded over to the pair a moment later, the boisterous monk seeming not so animated now.
Ah, but they wouldn't go. They would not listen to our words. And even now, with darkness looming in the forest, many insist that they will stay and fight.
Any who choose to stay and fight will surely die.
A pair of grisly men at a table near the common room entrance stood up, one kicking the table away as he rose. They glared at Elbrian for a long moment, but finally walked away, moving to the other side of the large hall. Undaunted, Elbrian moved to the long table that served as the bar and hopped atop it.
I tell you this only one time. I have just crawled through the ranks of our enemy. Deep lines of goblins and giants and powry dwarves.
Powries? Bah! A tale of lies!
Your only chance will be to get far from this place. And even now, escape will not be easy. I will take those that I can with me tonight, soon after the moon is set. As for the rest of you, your window through the monstrous force will be small, and any hesitation will cost you dearly.
Who are you to come in here and give orders?
True to his word, the ranger did not repeat his message.
Come, Avalyn, Pony. Let's go outside where we might speak in privacy.
Elbrian conferred with Avalyn first to confirm the potential of the magical stones. Then he talked more to Pony, who better understood the terrain of this region, with its hilly forests and many streams.
They too will come in through that valley. If they are as organized as your description of the assault on End of the World indicates, they will not leave so open a route behind them. They will come in through that valley and will take the tops of both hills.
Not many will make it through. The goblin line will be thin, and speed and surprise will be our allies. As for those on the hills, 3 friends are already preparing for them.
Pony nodded, not doubting the ranger's words. But still, another part of the plan troubled her deeply.
How can we place so much hope on animals?
The turquoise. It has given me insight into Symphony's thoughts. I can talk to the horse with my mind, and he understands. Of that I am sure.
We have few options.
No other.
Avalon saw the look that passed between them, and he walked away. Pony and Elbrion spent a long and quiet moment together. It ended wordlessly with a kiss that passed as a promise from Elbrion to the woman that she would not be abandoned, and as a promise from Pony that she and those who would leave would be ready when the moment of opportunity was upon them. The ranger left Weedy Meadow that night, moving through the winding valley east of the village with a fleeing family. The forest was quiet, but as Elbrion had suspected, it was not empty.
Goblins! 5 of them!
The ranger had an arrow ready on Hawkwing, but he didn't want to kill any monsters this night, not in this pass, where any bodies might alert the army to a possible hole in its raiding lines. So they sat tight and waited, the woman working hard to keep her youngest child, a mere infant, from crying. The goblins moved close. Elbrion kept the family down, tried to reassure them all by patting the other 2 children softly, by showing them his weapons, and that he was ready should they be discovered. Lying up front, the ranger said nothing when a goblin boot stepped firmly on the cold ground, barely 3 feet from his head. Elbrion laid still as a statue. The goblins kept wandering on along their patrol route in the valley, oblivious of the man and his refugees. The goblins' ignorance saved the creatures' lives that night, for death was barely an arm's length away. But more importantly, the goblins' ignorance also saved Elbrion's plan. The sky brightened to a dull gray shortly before the dawn, another lazy snowstorm dropping scattered flakes that floated to and fro during their descent. Elbrion and Bradwarden, on that same hill far to the south of Weedy Meadow, watched for the start of it all, for the first signs of the attack that they knew would come this day.
You left her there?
Elbrion cocked a curious eyebrow.
The girl. Your lover.
More than a lover.
Aye, and you left her there, with 10,000 monsters moving her way.
Elbrion continued to stare curiously at his half-equine friend.
You left the woman you love in harm's way.
It was Pony's choice to stay. Her duty was—
She could die this day.
Do you enjoy torturing me with your words?
Torturing? I'm admiring you, boy. You love the girl, but you left her in a town that's about to be sacked.
I trust her, and trust in her.
So I'm seeing. And that's your strength. Too many of your folk would have forced the girl by their side to protect her. You're smart enough to see that Pony needs little protecting.
Elbrion looked back to the north, to Weedy Meadow.
She could die this day.
So could we.
So could 10,000 goblins.
Suddenly, a streaking line of fire cut across the sky, a ball of flaming pitch soaring for Weedy Meadow.
Ah! Powdy catapult!
Time to go.
Avalon ran to the newest fire, clutching the sheet of serpentine in his plump hand.
Crispicocantus Clypeus.
Using the magical protection, Avalon walked right into the midst of the blaze, standing with flames licking to his shoulders, but smiling widely, to the amazement of those villagers witnessing the sight.
Crispicocantus Clypeus.
The monk fell deeper into the magic of the stone, calling forth its shielding powers, expanding its area of influence until this particular fire was smothered.
Oh, what?
Avalon pushed aside the would-be village firefighters so that he could use his much more effective method. The rain of powery fireballs increased.
Good folk! Remember what Elbrion said! Listen to me!
Pony was not surprised that now, with fireballs lighting structures by the minute and boulders crashing down about them, she found more people willing to listen to Elbrion's plan. Still, despite the flaming evidence, many of the proud and stubborn folk refused to admit that this was more than a simple goblin raid.
We'll push them back, chase them into the woods so far they'll never find their stinking way out!
This is ridiculous! You have to listen to reason!
Goblin!
Pony allowed her gaze to stray out across the field. a pair of Fomorian giants, 15 feet tall and 10 times the weight of a heavy man, paced back and forth in the shadows, eager to rush the wall.
Damn big goblins!
Tony looked down at the weapons the group carried, with shovels and pitchforks mostly, with only a single rusty old sword among them. Tony had given her own sword to the mother who had left with Elbrine, and now she carried only a slender club and a small axe.
Your weapons are useless! The east wall!
Tony found Aveline near that wall and paused as she approached, seeing a slight bluish glow among the timbers of the one east gate. She looked at the monk curiously.
I did not know that the Serpentine could have knocked a lasting barrier, nor do I know how long I might maintain it. But be assured that any fires brushing that gate will find no hold.
The army is charging!
Elbrine was running hard to keep up with Brad Warden. Symphony had taken to the woods, disappearing as a shadow might when the sun goes behind dark clouds. They came to their base camp, where Paulson, Crick, and Chipmunk waited.
They're filling the valley. A long line, goblins mostly, and not so deep.
Their power's on the hills.
But the traps are set.
All three men nodded eagerly. Elbrian closed his eyes and sent his thoughts out to Symphony.
Ready, Symphony?
Satisfied, Elbrian looked again at his immediate companions.
We must pick our targets carefully. We must thin their line wherever we may and take out any giants or those monsters that can get out of harm's way. Let Symphony do the rest.
The group started off quietly, Paulson, Crick, and Chipmunk going along the base of the North Hill, Elbrine and Brad Warden making their way to the south. Agile Pony got to the roof quickly and fell flat to her belly, falling low as spears arched over her as the monstrous horde came on through the north gate. She peeked over the edge of the roof, back into the village, and saw that only three of the five at the wall remained alive, and they were fleeing fast. The two giants banged against the fortified wall for a moment, then simply stepped over it. Tony looked past the giants to see Brother Avalon standing steady before them. Distracted, she was nearly hit by a spear. She spun about as a goblin's head appeared above the edge of the roof. Tony gave a quick glance to the east, which was still quiet.
Damn!
She put her legs under her and ran for the southwestern corner of the roof, leaping far into the air and grabbing the closest giant by the hair. Pony's momentum brought her right in front of the monster, their faces inches apart, and Pony wasted no time in planting her axe into that gruesome visage. Pony fell away, landing in a roll, and the second giant turned to her, ready to squash her flat.
Ho-ho! What?
A forked blast of blue-white lightning erupted from the monk's hand, one finger of the bolt striking each giant. The one Pony had hit in the face, its hands up to cover the wound, went flying backward, hitting the wall waist high and flipping right over it, crushing a goblin in the process. The other giant, its foot high to stamp Pony, jolted straight and stood trembling, too stunned to react as its intended victim ran off. She looked all about desperately. Goblins were crawling over the walls like ants, hundreds and hundreds, their sheer numbers burying any townsfolk who stood to challenge them.
Fighting in the east! Where is your plan?
Tony ran with the man back toward the eastern gate, while Avalon held the rear guard, loosing another lightning bolt that launched a dozen goblins from the rooftop Pony had just abandoned. A powery crawled atop the eastern wall directly in front of Pony and the villager, not so far from the gate.
Where is your plan?
The Powry stood on the eastern wall, but then kept moving forward, curiously, falling headlong over the structure and landing in the dirt, very still. A long arrow protruded from its back, an arrow with fletchings familiar to Pony.
There is my plan!
She looked to the east and saw hundreds of unfortunate goblins caught in front of a wild horse stampede. Yeah. She grabbed a pitchfork from one of the men nearby and ran to the eastern gate, bravely throwing it open. There stood a pair of goblins, stunned that the gate had opened before them. The other goblin turned to flee, but was stopped by an arrow to the heart. Pony looked back and spotted Elbrian sitting on a low branch of a tree on the northern side of the ravine, hawkwing in hand. Below the ranger, Brad Warden ran back and forth, trampling goblins and powries, or bashing them down with his heavy cudgel. Tony didn't have time to consider the move, for the thunder approached, led by powerful symphony. Goblins and powries scattered, or were crushed beneath the charge, 100 wild horses stampeding along the ravine. As Avalyn rushed past her, she noted that he was glowing slightly, that same bluish hue as the Eastern Gate. Tony held the townsfolk back as Avalyn ran out among the goblins. He held forth his hand. Tony caught sight of a red sparkle from within his grasp.
Fortis Draconis Incendium!
A hot wind brushed Tony's face and blew into the stunned villagers standing beside her. When the flames dissipated an instant later, Avalyn stood alone, and the way was open. Yeah! Or almost open. A powry came rushing up from behind a stone, its hair burned away, its face blackened, its club no more than a withered, charred stick. In his other hand, Avalyn clutched a third stone, brown and striped with black tiger's paw.
Bestia Catus! Vis infractum imperium minuo dictata!
Avalyn's fingers crunched and shortened. His fingernails narrowed and slipped back under the knuckles. And then came a great itching as orange and black fur erupted all along the length of his arm. The powry got to the monk, but Avalyn had recovered now. Now, the way was clear.